What have we done up to now? Up to now, we managed somehow to replace, okay, the tangent cone with some algebraic expressions. Okay, here. What we would like is to have a complete description of the tangent cone in terms of the constraining function gi. But this proposition shows us that we can only somehow bound the tangent cone, because the tangent cone includes this set and it is included in this other one. Okay? But it may be different from both. Okay? So what we would actually like to have is an equality. Okay? Okay, you can have an equality here, but you cannot have an equality here because, zero belongs here, okay, and zero does not belong here, because d equals zero here would be zero less than zero, so it's not possible, okay. In other more precise topological terms, this is an open set, and we checked some time ago that this is a closed set, okay. So, if they are equal, the set is both open and closed. And the unique sets which are both open and closed are the empty set, but this cannot be empty, and the full space. Okay? So, these are always different unless this is the full, unless they are both the full space. And so, the candidate for the equality is this one. Okay. But we have shown that through an example that in general it is not true. Okay. So what we are left is this procedure here. Okay. I start from the minimum point, I have my optimality conditions in terms of the tangent cone exploiting this inclusion, I can turn it into the impossibility of the linear system. Okay. And so the truth now is a so-called theorem of the alternative, which I will give you in a pretty general form, theorem of the alternative for linear inequalities, which is due to Motzkin. So, this is a theorem due to Motzkin. It goes back to the 30s, I think 1936, and was not studied to in relation with optimization. It is a result in the linear algebra. Okay? There is a family of theories, so-called theories of the alternative, which relate the impossibility of a linear system to the solvability of another linear system. In other words, this theorem says this system has no solution if and only if this other system has a solution. Okay? And how is the statement of the theorem? Let me give it okay to you. So, we have some vectors let's call it B, L, C, J in Rn, where K belongs to an index set that we call I less, L will be in an index set which I will call I less or equal, and J will be in an index set which I will call I equal. Okay. Where are finite, so in the set, so with n, they could also be empty, except the first one. Okay.
So let's say this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And this is 1, 2. This is 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. This could be empty, which means that these vectors are not considered. But this has to be not empty. Okay. And I'm saying I would like to find some vector d such that as negative scalar product with all I k, which has non-positive scalar product with all vectors bn, and which has and which is orthogonal to all vectors Cj. Okay. So I would like to find a vector d which satisfies these strict inequalities, these inequalities, and these equalities. Okay. I'm giving you the most general form of the theorem. And the statement says that this system has no solution in Rn if and only if another system I'm going to give you has a solution. Let's see. Let's go back to our conditions. You see, this is a particular case of this system. Okay? This is the case in which there are no inequalities and equalities, there are just strict inequalities. Okay? Our theorem is just a particular, our situation is just a particular case of this case. Okay? And so this system has no solution if and only if this other system I'm going to write you has a solution. So the system is done this way. The sum all over k of theta k ik, where theta k is a number, okay, plus the sum over L of lambda L BL, where lambda L are numbers, plus sum over j of mu j cj. Okay, so these are coefficients, a number, and these are vectors. Okay, and the variables here I can enlight them in red are the numbers. These are the unknowns. I would like to find these coefficients in such a way that this is the zero vector in Rn. Okay? I'm summing with appropriate coefficients vector over Rn. I would like this to be true, and also theta k has to be greater or equal than zero, and also lambda L has to be greater or equal than zero, while mu j can be both positive and negative. So this is the system, and I'm saying that my original system has no solution if this system has a solution given by theta k
lambda L and mu J such that theta T are not all zero. This is important.
Okay. Because clearly
this system has an obvious solution. Okay. Take all the coefficients to be zero. This is the zero vector. Okay. So you want a non-trivial solution.
Okay. So this system, where these are data and this is,
and these are the unknowns,
has no solution if and only if this system has a solution where these coefficients are not all zero. If one or both of these are empty, so there are no inequality less or equal, or there are no equality, this, the corresponding part goes away from here. Okay. So this is a compact way to state a number of theorems together. Okay. I could have just stated without this, and without this. Okay. It would do the job for us now, but on Thursday I'm going to use it also when we have this and this. Or maybe it's also today a little bit. Is the statement clear? Okay. This system is impossible. It's exactly the same thing that we can find coefficients here such that these equalities are satisfied by coefficients with these properties. Theta k and lambda l are greater or equal than zero, and theta k are not all zeros. Okay. Just if you want to check if Farkas lemma, which some of you know, is a particular case of these results where there are no equalities. So this is not here, so it means this is not here, and this is not here. And this is just made by a unique case. Okay? This index set is just given by a unique index. Okay? So, a unique index here, no equalities, this is Farkas lemma. What about the proof that I'm not going to show you? There are two ways to make this proof. One is very boring and long. Okay, it goes back to the 30s. It's a long sequence of transformations of linear systems and limits, and it's very, very long. There is another one which is very compact, very short, but it needs the knowledge of some more advanced tools for mathematical analysis, which are the so-called separation theorems, which state when it is possible to separate with an hyperplane convex set. Okay, so it's beyond our aim. So don't care about it. You can go on books and find a very long and complicated proof, or a more compact proof with some more advanced mathematical tools, which actually are not that impossible, because we could prove them in this course, because we have all the tools, because the tools are projections. So a couple of weeks ago we have seen projections, okay, which are specific optimization problems with their own optimality conditions. If you use projection, you can prove the separation theorem, and you can prove this in a very elegant way. Okay, but it would take a couple of it would take a full 2 hours lecture of proof, so it is not our interest. What's our interest? Okay, we have a special case here of this impossibility. So we would like to turn our special case into the solvability of a system done this way. So, our system is this one, and with some effort, we show that if x bar is a local minimum point, then this system of inequalities has no solution D. Okay? So we are just in this situation where there are no equalities and no inequalities with less or equal. Okay. Our vectors AK are the gradient of F and the gradient of the GIs. Okay. So we know that this has no solution. Can be written. Let's see. Okay, we need to write this. So we have theta let's call it theta 0 plus the first AK plus the sum for all I acting, where we have the coefficient theta I gradient GI equals 0, theta 0 and theta I greater or equal than 0, not all 0. So, thanks to I should have written the other way around. So, the theorem tells us there exists theta 0 and theta I such that this is true. So, there exists theta 0 and theta I greater or equal to 0, not all 0, such that this vector is the 0 vector.
Okay, I'm going to change slightly the notation because it's customary to call this theta I lambda I. Okay, it doesn't matter much, just me. But they do not correspond to this one. Sorry, I should have used different letters. So, If XY is a local minimum point, boom, we follow all these paths and we arrive. There exists theta 0, lambda I, not all zeros, such that this vector is the zero vector. It's not that different from the one that we had in the example. In the example, we had here 1, okay, and then we have the sum with non-negative coefficients of this gradient for the active constraints. Okay? We have here 1, while here it is possible to have 0. So it's not exactly what we had there yet. Okay? Then there is also another trick which is used to write this this formula in a more elegant way. Okay. It would be nice here to make the sum all over the constraints, active or non-active. Okay. How can you do that? Well, if a constraint is non-active, you could put the coefficient equal to 0. Okay. So that free formula is exactly the same of this one, where the sum is all over the constraint, active or non-active, with this condition that says, okay, if the constraint is non-active, then the coefficient has to be 0. I'll show you how it works. Okay. If the constraint I is active, this is 0. Okay? So this is satisfied. If the constraint is not active, this is non-zero, so lambda I has to be 0. So this plus this is exactly the same thing as this. Okay? What is the difference? The difference is that now, in this rule here, you sum all over the constraints. In our example, we had 3 constraints, 2 were active and the 3rd was not. Okay? And we wrote that, if you remember, the gradient of F was 1/2 the gradient of G1 plus 1 times the gradient of G2. We did not consider G3, but we could also have written plus 0 times the gradient of G3. Okay. So these two are different. What is the reason for doing this? Well, the reason for doing this is that actually, we don't know x bar. Okay? We are looking for a minimum point, so we are looking for x bar. So we don't know when we want to solve this system which are the active constraints and which are not. Okay, so we would like formulas which do not depend on the fact that a constraint is active or not. Okay, so relying on Moskin theorem, we proved this. If x bar is a local minimum point of our problem, then there exists theta 0 and lambda I for I that goes to 1 to n, not all 0, such that this equality is 4. The two things have their own names. This is this is a system of equations, okay? Because these are vectors and these are coefficients. This is called the multipliers rule.
And these are called the complementarity flatness conditions. For Italian guys, flatness, complementarity flatness is translated into scarti complementari. Okay, which you have seen a case in linear programming. Okay, the coefficients are called multipliers. Complementarity flatness says, okay, all a constraint is active, so this is zero, or the corresponding multiplier is zero. One of the two has to be zero. That's the complementarity. Okay, this theorem, I will not write it once again. If this is a local minimum, then the multiplier's rule and the complementarity flatness conditions holds for multipliers which are not zero, is known as the Fritz-John optimality condition. Okay. What's bad about this optimality condition? There's just one thing which we should not like, and it is, suppose, so we said that these are not all zero, but we are not saying which one of them is not zero. Not all zero, but could be one of the lambda i's, or it could be the zero. Suppose theta 0 is 0. Okay? Read this condition. Okay? What do you notice? We are dealing with an optimization problem, so we have an objective function f and constraining functions gi's. Okay? But if this is 0, this is away from here, so this holds true regardless of the objective function. Okay? If this multiplier is zero, then the objective function plays no role in the optimality condition. Okay? And this is not good. Because if you have an optimality condition which does not depend on the function you are trying to minimize, okay, this is pretty weak. It could be useful in some case, but it's pretty weak. So this result is not completely satisfactory, and where's the source of the trouble? The source of the trouble is that here we replaced the tangent cone with a smaller set. Okay? Here we move, this implies this, this implies this, but this is false. Okay, so we weaken the optimality condition to turn it into something in which we have just functions. Okay? So, we need something that tells us this is non-zero. Okay? I would like to add some assumptions such that this is non-zero. Okay? With no assumption, here
we get this,
and one of these has to be zero, at least one of them.
Now I want to have some assumption
in such a way that I'm sure that the one which is not zero is theta zero.
Okay?
In such a way, here I can remove it.
Okay? Because is it clear to you? If this is not zero, I can divide by it, and here we have one. Okay? So,
and these are divided by theta zero.
Okay? So, if this is not zero, we can suppose it to be one. Okay?
Now, I'm in trouble because I don't know what to cancel. Because I would like to keep all of this stuff. So, suppose theta 0 is equal to 0.
Okay?
What does the first condition become? The first condition becomes the sum over lambda over I of lambda I, the gradient of g I of x bar as 0. Okay? Well, these vectors, by definition of linear dependence, are linear dependent. So, and also, since we have complementarity, we can consider the sum just over the active constraints, because this other condition is telling us that the multipliers corresponding to non-active constraints are zero. So, I could add this assumption. Suppose that these gradients are linearly independent.
Okay?
If I suppose those gradients to be linearly independent, then it is not possible that this is zero, because otherwise the vectors would be linearly dependent.
Okay.
So, and now I need to erase something, and I have to choose. I think this we have in mind it very clearly now. Okay. So I will write it again when we... So I proved you another theorem. Let's suppose x bar is a local minimum point such that these gradients are linearly independent. Then these conditions hold with theta bar, no, with theta zero equal to one.
And so this is the very first of the so-called Carey-Kuhn-Tucker or shortly KKT optimality condition. Funny story, some call them just Kuhn-Tucker.
Okay.
Carus was the first to prove this type of theorem before the Second World War at the University of Chicago in his thesis, but he did not publish the result because his advisor told him, these are things which are obvious because they have been done by Lagrange almost two centuries ago. And after the war, Kuhn and Tucker gave the same kind of results, okay, and they gave somehow birth to nonlinear optimization, modern nonlinear optimization. Okay? So sometimes you also just hear this to be called Kuhn Tucker or KT. Okay? But to be more faithful, we should say, carries from heaven. And if they didn't want to stand, I already proved it. So, let X bar be a local minimum point. Of our problem, such that the gradient of the active constraints at X bar are linearly independent. Then there exists lambda I greater or equal than zero, such that the gradient of f at x bar plus the sum over I of lambda I, the gradient of g I at x bar, is the zero vector plus the complementarity condition lambda I g I x bar equal to zero. The same as before, if this is zero, the vectors would be linearly dependent against the definition, so this has to be different from zero. I can divide it by it, and the multipliers here, lambda I, are the ones I have in the previous drawing divided by theta zero. Okay? Lambda I are known this time as Lagrange multipliers. Okay. This is also known as the Lagrange multipliers rule, and these are the complementarity slackness, so the very same name. And now we are happy because the objective function is here and there's no way you take it out from the condition. Okay? So, once again, these are, I would like to find an X bar which is feasible, so satisfies the constraints, and lambda I greater or equal than zero, such that this n plus m equalities in the n plus m variables are satisfied. Okay. So I turn the necessary optimality condition into a linear system. No, sorry. Into a system, a non-linear system of equalities. Okay. But it's not true that I have n plus m equalities in n plus m variables, because I also have feasibility and the fact that these coefficients have to be greater or equal than zero. Okay. So, if I want to tell them all, I have these equations plus the feasibility conditions. Okay? Otherwise, I could simply try to use a Newton method. Okay? Because otherwise we would have n plus m equations in n plus m variables. Okay? This makes the situation a bit more difficult. This result is pretty strong in the sense that this assumption of linear independence
here
is extremely strong assumption. Why is it extremely strong? Well, it is strong because they do not simply guarantee the existence of these multipliers, but they guarantee also the uniqueness of the multipliers. Okay? Because now I can cancel this. Frick-John. So Frick-John is an intermediate event. Well, okay, suppose you have multipliers lambda I bar and multipliers lambda F. Then subtract the second from the first, okay? When you do this vector minus this vector, their difference is zero because they are both zero, but this cancel. So when you do that, what you are left with is the sum is zero. Then also we have the complementarity flatness, so these are all zero except for the active constraint. But these gradients are linearly independent. When it is possible that a linear combination of linearly independent vector is zero? If and only if, by definition, the coefficients are zero. So, if and only if lambda I bar is equal to lambda I hat. So, this is the proof that under this assumption of linear independence, there exist unique multipliers. Okay? Is this satisfactory? Well, it is satisfactory and it is not satisfactory at the same time. It is satisfactory because it is a nice result. It is not satisfactory because it looks like this assumption is too strong. Okay? It cannot be met in many cases, in many circumstances. Okay? For instance, if you have more constraints than variables, okay, and you might have at some point that more than two constraints are acted at the same time, so it's strong. So the question is, and we will answer that on Thursday, is this possible to replace these assumptions with a weaker assumption? Okay? I mean, can I replace this assumption on the constraints with another assumption which guarantees, once again, the existence of multipliers with one here, of Lagrange multiplier, not Frick-John multipliers, okay? any assumption such that, on the contrary, such that the KKT optimality condition, so the Lagrange multipliers rules plus the slack, complementarity slackness hold, are called constraint qualifications. Okay? So, a constraint qualification is an assumption such that Fritz-John multipliers exist and the multiplier corresponding to the objective function is non-zero. Or equivalently such that the KKT condition are satisfied. There are many constraints qualification. I will just mention two, and then we stop. The first one is the so-called Slater constraint qualification, and the requirements are the following. The functions GR, so the Slater constraint qualification holds at X bar if the functions GI are convex whenever I is an active constraint, plus there exists some point in Rn which satisfies all the constraints as a strict inequality. Okay. In other terms, X is an interior point of the region. Okay. By continuity, if GI in XX is less than zero for all I's, there is a ball centered in XF such that all these functions, in all points of the ball are less or equal than zero, and so the ball belongs to the physical region. Okay. So Slater is convexity of constraints plus the existence of a point in the interior of the physical region. And the other one I'm mentioning to you is Manga Zarian Konovic, which can be stated in a very simple way. Okay. The linearizing set with the strict inequality is non-empty. Okay. I give you a third one and then I stop, because the third one is actually what we are looking for. It goes under the name of Abadie, but it is more a geometric condition. It says the following. The tangent curve is indeed equal to the linearizing set with less or equal. Okay. It is possible to prove, I will not show you, that linear independence of the gradients, Slater and Mangazarian Fromovic, all imply this condition by Abadie. And on Friday, I will start from here to convince you that this is exactly what we need to get this. Okay? And the tool will be once again Motzkin theorem. Okay? So, the plan for Thursday is I'm going to complete this topic and show you, with no proofs, just giving the idea, the case in which you also have equality constraints. Okay? And then in the remaining lectures, the remaining three lectures, we will develop algorithm based on these conditions. Okay.